What's up? Another episode of Ripple Effect Podcast. I'm your host, Ricky Verandas. We got an awesome guest and an even more amazing story. His name's Alan Bell. He was a prosecutor, and now he's an Amazon best-selling author of the book called Poison, How a Crime-Busting Prosecutor Turned His Medical Mystery into a Crusade for Environmental Victims. I'm not going to tell you too much about the book because nobody tells the story better than Alan does. And he's been on a bunch of different shows, Coast to Coast, Watching the Hawks, a bunch of TV shows and stuff like that. But the nice thing about doing a podcast is we go much deeper into his story and much deeper into his life because we do have this 1 hour platform. So amazing story, really tugs at your heartstrings. You guys are really going to enjoy this and how this one incident turned his whole life upside down and what it means for, or how it turned him into an activist. And similar to when I had Abraham Bolden on, who was the first African-American Secret Service agent on a presidential detail, and his link to the JFK assassination and him telling his just crazy whistleblowing story. It's a pretty amazing story. And when you get somebody who has a pretty amazing story and also is a very good storyteller, it makes for an awesome show. And all I have to do is sit back and let them tell their story. And this is what I did. That's what I did with Abraham. And that's what I did with Alan Bell for the most part. Just let him tell a story. So again, I don't want to ruin the show for you. So definitely enjoyed the show. I'm not going to tell you much more. I know you're probably thinking, well, can you tell me what the fuck the story is or what the story is about? But you're going to find out hopefully after this very short intro. Also, we might do a fight with friends this coming up weekend. I don't know when you're going to hear this, but today is it's June 7th, and this coming up weekend there's a UFC event, and actually I think for the next couple weekends there's going to be UFC events, so just keep a lookout on my Twitter account. Now I'm on Instagram at RVTheory6, or just look up Ricky Verandas, and our Facebook page, I'll end up putting updates and letting you guys know if we're going to go live and do a show. If you guys don't know what a fight with friends is, it's when we do something similar to Joe Rogan and his Fight Companion shows. We watch a UFC event live and we hang out, we talk, and we bullshit. And sometimes we talk about the fight, sometimes we talk about our personal lives and everything else in between. So we just stream live on our YouTube channel and you can listen to us instead of listening to the UFC announcers. So just another option, and it's always fun shows for me because we get to hang out and drink and talk, and you know, there's no real research or anything crazy I have to do before the show to just get familiar with anybody's work or anything like that. So just really fun and easy shows from my perspective. Also, remember to rate us on iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play, wherever you listen to us. There's still people who don't know how easy it is to get podcasts. If you have an Android, Podcast Addict's probably my favorite app, but also Google Play has podcasts now, Stitcher, all that stuff. So really easy to find. And obviously we're also on YouTube, so you can find us on YouTube. And in the show description, I always have all the guest website links and Twitter links and all that stuff. So another great way of just getting all that stuff. And we also have a Patreon page. So if you guys want to check out our Patreon page, you want to support the show, another great way of supporting the show. And anytime there's anything that I can give you guys extra, I'll do it and give you or just make it exclusive to the Patreon supporters. Just recently, I shared a link to the Tragedy and Hope, Richard Grove, who has the Tragedy and Hope website. I was on his podcast called The Deep End and shared that link on our Patreon page. So all our Patreon supporters, which is I think a total of not a lot right now, got that link, and all his subscribers and supporters also got the link. So anytime there's anything like that, I'll share with you guys, or you know, anything I can do to kind of say thanks for supporting the show. And also you can also get RV or Theory 6 music anywhere you get digital downloads. All those links are in the show description, and that's another great way. All that money goes directly to the podcast and to the music project. So that's it. Get ready, enjoy the show, and keep a lookout. Hopefully we'll be doing a live show very soon, but if not, keep a lookout for some great guests that I have coming up on the show. Talk to you in the next one. Peace. Well, thank you so much for being with me. I really appreciate it. I actually heard you on Watching the Hawks. I'm a big fan of those guys. They've been on my show a bunch of times, and and they always have really interesting guests. And I was watching them usually in the morning. I watch their show on my tablet while I'm getting ready to have my coffee in the morning, getting ready for the day. And your story came on, and it was compelling. And one thing that I talk a lot about on this show is just health things. You know, I have functional medicine experts on, and people who research cancer and alternative medicine and anything that has to do with health and nutrition. And because I think it's something that affects us all, you know, and your story was kind of a different aspect of health and nutrition that a lot of people don't really focus on or talk about or realize how important it is. So when So when I heard your story, like, I got to get Alan on, because I'm like, that's something that I've kind of, you know, I've looked into it a little bit. I've seen some people talk about just the chemicals that are in our clothes and stuff that are, you know, we have a family-owned construction company, so we deal with asbestos. You know, we understand the hazardous materials that are in construction stuff and stuff that we've used for infrastructure and for buildings and houses and all that stuff. But when people hear your story, I think they're really going to have a different perspective on what could be causing their lack of health, and it could be coming from somewhere where you really wouldn't think it would be coming from. You know, I'm when I was listening to your story, I was thinking to myself, how many people are going to hear this story and then re-examine where they live, where they work, and what could possibly be causing them to feel like crap. So for my listeners who aren't familiar with your story and your background, where did it start? How did this all happen? You know, all the way back from, you know, you were living the life, everything was good. You were a very successful attorney, and you know, you had you're a parent, you had a daughter, you had a family, a wife, everything was going good. And then things turned for the worse.
That's right. You know, take yourself back to the 1980s. At that time, I was living in South Florida, and I was an organized crime prosecutor, prosecuting the Colombian cartel drug rings and the mob. Really, you know, living the real Miami Vice at that time, literally hanging out of helicopters, wearing .357 shoulder holsters, and living that kind of a life. It was I was living the American dream. I had a new baby girl. It was a nice marriage. Everything couldn't be going better. And then suddenly something strange happened. I began to develop a series of symptoms that were benign at first. It started off as a sore throat, and then the sinuses began to hurt, and I started to get a little fatigued, and just basically brushed it off as a cold. But the cold didn't go away. It continued to get worse and worse and worse until finally it progressed into the point that I felt like I had a really bad flu. I was getting high fevers, very weak, dizzy, disoriented, and ultimately I developed seizures. And I started to consult with the finest doctors in America. I went all over the country, Mayo Clinic, Cleveland Clinic, National Jewish, University of Colorado, and so forth and so on. And after several months of doing this with no answers, finally I was in National Jewish Hospital in Denver, Colorado, which was one of the top immunological hospitals, allergy and immunological hospitals in the country. And the doctor sat me down with a very grim face and said to me, Mr. Bell, the blood tests just came back, and we think we know what's wrong with you. I said, well, what's that? And he said, you were poisoned. And I just sat back in my chair and had to digest what he said and said, what? He says, yes, you were poisoned. Do you know of anybody that would have wanted to poison you? And just chuckled at that point in time and said, yeah, I could think of dozens that would want to take a ticket and wait online. He said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, I'm an organized crime prosecutor, and that's what I did for a living. He said, well, that's probably the most likely culprit. Go back home, rest for a few weeks before we start the next round of blood tests, take rest. So I went back to South Florida, and I immediately got my investigators to search every aspect of my life, where I worked out at the gym, restaurants that I ate at, bowling alleys that I went to, movie theaters that I went to, friends that I associated with, the courthouse that I worked in, and ultimately they went to the building that I worked in. And what they discovered is that there were other people inside that building that I was working in that got sick as well. And my immediate reaction was, oh my God, they've poisoned them too? that was my initial, impression.
At this time, did you have a hunch on who, because I know that obviously, like you said, there's a long list of who it could have been possibly, but obviously you had some time to think about it. At this time, while this investigation is happening, was there any, did you narrow it down to a couple of people that you were like sold on, okay, I think I know who it could have been, maybe, anybody that you think you pissed off more than others? You have any hunches, you think?
Not really, because over the years there were thousands of them.
Yeah, good point.
And
yeah.
After a while, you can't even keep track anymore. I can remember one day I was filling up my car with gasoline, and somebody came up from behind me at the gas station and tapped me on the shoulder. This is before I got ill. And I turned around. It was this big guy, about 6'7". He looked down on me and said, "Do you remember me?" And I'm looking at this guy, and I'm looking at him and go, no, I really didn't remember him. And he said, well, you had put me away 7 years ago, and I just want you to know I'm out now. And I really didn't even know who he was, because there were so many of them.
Wow. Did you end up figuring out who it was? Did it come to you?
The guy at the gas station?
Yeah.
No, never, never knew.
See, that's
never knew.
That's scary.
Never knew. And I got to tell you, even after I got sick because of the media, I mean, we're getting ahead of the story, but
yeah.
The media attention on the fact that I had gotten ill, there was actually another prisoner that was still in jail who contacted me and told me he had this secret treatment that could get me well. And I said, well, who are you? He told me he had robbed 5 farm stores, armed robbery, and put the people, the victims, inside the coolers and locked them in there. And that guy I did remember.
Wow.
But the treatment that he recommended over the phone was so vile. He told me to drink my own urine.
Oh, yeah. Mixed martial artists, people in training who do MMA, some people have done that, drinking your own urine. If you take an excess of vitamins, you urinate it out. That's why sometimes you get that really, colorful urine, and all you're doing is drinking, some excess vitamins. I'm not sure there's any real science behind it. It probably mans you up a little bit, makes you feel tougher, I just did that, so
right.
But yeah, it's a scary thing. I mean, when you look at when I remember hearing your story and you talking about just all obviously dealing with so many mobsters and violent people, I mean, it just, even that part of your story was intriguing to me, because I mean, just living that type of life and having a daughter and a wife, and I know I have a lot of police officer friends, and one thing that they all talk about is how a lot of times they don't want to work in the same town that they grow up in, or they don't want to work in the same town they live in because of that issue of going to the grocery store and running into somebody you locked up and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's something.
Well, you have to remember, back then in Miami, it was a pretty big town. It was an international destination, and there were people coming in from all over the world there. It had the number one crime rate in the country. Per capita. So it wasn't a small town, really didn't have that many problems in that respect. So that, to me, really wasn't an issue, because if a mafioso or a cartel person wanted to get rid of their case by murdering somebody, they would usually go after a witness not the prosecutor, because the witnesses, they're indispensable. If you knock off a witness, there goes the case. But if you knock off the prosecutor, there's 100 more behind me that could continue the case.
Good point. So, yeah.
And these sophisticated criminals, they know that. So
did you have witnesses who wouldn't want to be involved in certain cases because they knew that?
Witnesses?
Yeah. Did you?
Oh, sure. All the time. That's why most of the witnesses that we had were what you call confidential informants, where their identity remains unknown and it goes under seal unless or until the judge orders that the record become unsealed. So that happens all the time. And there's a thing called the Witness Protection Program, where if somebody does testify against the mob and their identity is thereafter revealed because they have to testify in trial, what the government will do is they'll completely give them a new identity, a new name, and bring them somewhere else in the country, and they start a life all over again. And they actually, give them resources to do that, so they're not left out financially on their own. Now, so that's what happens in worst case scenarios.
Now, with somebody like yourself who was so close to dealing with mobsters and seeing their stories, and you've seen witnesses, I'm sure, get threatened, and I'm sure you probably even seen some disappear or something like that. Some crazy stuff happen. One thing I've always talked about, because I've talked to people about pharmaceutical companies and chemical companies, and something you've said in past interviews is follow the money, and that's what I always say. Anytime there's a lot of money, you can guarantee that there's going to be some corruption. And sometimes you hear about things happen, like a natural remedy doctor or somebody that's really well-known or having success with alternative medicine or functional medicine or something like that, have a mysterious death. And I'm not saying that it was something, a conspiracy to take him out. But it's funny how when we're talking about mobster stories, people get taken out all the time. But when you're talking about big pharma, you're talking about big chemical companies, when you're talking about, millions and billions of dollars that these companies make off, the public, and there's so much money on the line from, just from preventing something from being banned or proven to be unsafe. Why would that be out of the picture of something like that happening? It's like people, I always say, I'm like, mobsters have killed people for much less. And it always makes you wonder, like, when you're dealing with these big, international corporations, couldn't that happen in those cases too?
Oh, sure. And that's why later on in my journey, when we continue on in the story,
sorry about that.
That concept really resonated with me as being something very familiar that I had dealt with as a prosecutor. Because, like I said, on Watching the Hawks, follow the money. And that's where it will always invariably lead you to the bad guys. Always, always, always.
Okay. Yeah. So I'll get you back. Yeah. Sorry about getting you off your story. This podcast, I like to have a casual conversation. So sometimes it leads me down certain roads, and I don't like to put the brakes on because sometimes it leads to some really interesting stories that the guests share and stuff like that.
I'd be happy to hit that point now if you'd like me to.
Absolutely.
It's up to you.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Well. Yeah. Basically. You know. My journey later led me to a place to understand and discover that there is a cozy symbiotic relationship between the chemical companies and the federal government. And what do I mean by that? What I mean is that the chemical companies have lobbyists that influence legislation in Congress. And what they influence is they want to make sure that the laws that are in place now stay just the way they are. And the way the laws are now is that chemicals are presumed innocent until proven guilty, which means anybody can introduce a new chemical into the marketplace without testing for its toxic effects on humans and introduce it for things that you wear, building materials, anything other than for purposes of what you eat and what you drink. Anything else, you could put the most toxic chemicals you want in furniture and carpeting and automobiles, and the list goes on, building materials, and the list goes on and on and on. And it's legal, unless or until it's otherwise proven that these chemicals are unsafe. Well, who's going to prove that? The chemical company is certainly not going to do that. The government's certainly not going to do that. So who would do that? Maybe 10 or 20 years later, when millions of people get sick and die, and they hire lawyers who file class action lawsuits, and then they hire expert witnesses, and they thereafter sue for monetary damages because of that. So let's say they went in court, let's say like asbestos or other materials that were later proven in court decades later that they were toxic or unsafe. So what happens is the chemical company goes out of business. They open up another company across the street with a different name, and they introduce another brand new chemical that's been untested that's equally or even more toxic than the last one. And there you have this cycle that keeps going. And as a result of that, you've got millions of Americans that are getting sick and dying every year. Now, the relationship goes more insidious than that. Because the chemical companies are, typically related to the pharmaceutical companies. And the pharmaceutical companies influence the curriculum in medical schools. In other words, they influence what is being taught to medical students when they go through medical school. And they certainly don't want medical students to learn how many of these chemicals are hurting and killing people. So as a result of that, believe it or not, on the average, less than 6 hours of instruction is given to the average medical doctor on how environmental toxins adversely affect human health. Now, that means medical doctors are coming out of school, these doctors are coming out of school having virtually no idea on what these chemicals are doing to their patients. They have no idea how to recognize symptoms related to environmental exposure when a victim comes into their office complaining of certain symptoms. The last thing in the world these practitioners usually are going to even identify is an environmental link to these illnesses.
Well, isn't that...
But on the other hand, yep. On the other hand, more people get sick and die from environmental exposure than all those afflicted with AIDS, accidents, war, and crime combined. It is the silent epidemic of the 21st century. One out of every two men are going to get cancer in our lifetimes. One out of every three women are going to get cancer in their lifetimes. And all cases of cancer, out of all the cases of cancer, 80% of them is caused by the environment that we're exposed to in our own home, our own school, and our own workplace. So is there a formal conspiracy to substantiate why all this is happening? I don't believe there's a formal conspiracy, but what I do believe is that there's a various group of parties, huge parties and high levels, that are motivated by making a buck. And each of these parties are traveling under their own agenda to make money. And Party A is not in collusion with Party B or Party C, but each one of these parties individually want to keep the system just the way it is because they're all making money.
Oh, now, absolutely.
Now, in contrast to what's happening in the United States, it's not so in other developed countries like Canada or Germany, or United States or the Netherlands. They have laws that basically say that chemicals are presumed guilty until proven innocent, which means you can't introduce products that contain toxic chemicals in those countries unless there's data to show that they're safe. Now, I'll give you a perfect example. Computers, Apple Computer. Apple Computer will sell one version to Europe, the other version to the United States. The one in the United States is cheaper to build because it's got some more toxic chemicals in it. The ones in Europe are less toxic because of the laws there that are more stringent, and they sell less toxic, you know, units there. Side by side, same company, same product, different toxicity. And I'm just using that as an example. Yeah.
Well, that's similar with food, too. There's food that is sold in the U.S. that's banned by the EU in Europe. I mean, that, you know, our corn and certain foods are genetically modified food. I mean, it's the same thing. Instead of us being the leaders of health and the leaders of being an example to the rest of the world by showing, you know, how great this country is, and it just, it shows you how, you know, in a lot of cases, we aren't the healthiest for a lot of obvious reasons. And it's funny because I've used the, you know, I've thought about this recently about the free will debate. I'm sure you're familiar with like the free will debate, the idea that, you know, there is no such thing as free will. Everything's influenced by something which ends up causing you to make that decision. And, you know, we're a product of our environment. Well, that similar type of idea, I was thinking about health, because a lot of times we think like, okay, we just decide, or we just cross our fingers and we know there's things we can't and cannot control. And we do our best to control the things we can. You know, we cross our fingers that if we eat good and we take our vitamins and we eat organic and all that stuff, we're going to be healthy. And then there's other things that happen that are just by complete just bad luck. And
right,
I think
right.
the one thing about your story that's really interesting is that I think that if you retrace everybody's steps and you could analyze every single aspect of people's lives from, and maybe their parents' lives and down to generations, it's not luck. It could be things that they were exposed to. It could be a lack of making good health choices, and probably a lot of our lack of health is a lot more obvious and could be prevented more than we would assume. And even like in this case, like, for example, you know, in your case, you could have easily just assumed this is just bad luck. I did everything right. It's just a luck of the draw. I was an athlete. I was in good health and all this stuff. And I just happened to get sick. And like you were saying, the cancer thing, cancer is one of those typical diseases that everybody assumes like, okay, well, you just either get it or you don't. You really can't do much about it, you know? And like the statistic you were just bringing up, obviously that's not the case, that there can't, we do have some control, or we do have a lot of control over the majority of our health. And so that's another reason why I think your story is so important.
Okay, if you boil all human disease and premature death to its most two basic common denominators, other than war, accident, and crime, it is this. Number one, the genes that you're born with. And number two, the environment that you're exposed to. And you brought up a good point about our ancestors. I mean, scientists have recently discovered that the chemicals that your grandparents and your great-grandparents and your parents were exposed to basically alters the genes that are passed down in the DNA, and it can manifest one, two, or three generations later. That means what we're doing to ourselves right now can affect what's going to happen to our kids and their kids.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, there's a statistic that came out. Phil Langrigan, who is the head of the Mount Sinai Medical Center in New York, the environmental health center there, he states that since 1950, over 85,000 chemicals have been introduced into our environment, and few have been tested for its toxic effects on humans. And our children and our children's children are the experimental animals.
Oh, absolutely. We're the guinea pigs. And I say the same thing about pharmaceutical companies. I mean, pharmaceutical companies are just chemicals, and you're putting something in your body that wasn't designed to be digested by humans. We don't have, you know, thousands and thousands of years of eating it and digesting it, so our body knows what to do with. So then,
right.
Like I always say, it's like putting a virus in a computer. It goes crazy. Like you put this chemical pill in your body, and then that's why you have all these side effects, because it's not food. It isn't supposed to be digested, so it doesn't know what to do with it. And I mean, similar thing like you were saying with chemicals, you know, innocent until proven guilty. Look at fracking. Fracking, same thing. How many chemicals do they put in, or they used in fracking, that a lot of them have there's not enough research to even know if they're safe or not safe. And everybody's like, well, fracking's safe. You know, it's not what's causing the earthquakes. It's not what's causing this and that. And it's just like, well, we don't know because, you know, like you said, unfortunately, everything's innocent till proven guilty. And when really it should be guilty to proven innocent, because if not, then we are the guinea pigs. Pharmaceutical companies, same thing. By law, pharmaceutical companies don't have to release any studies that prove that their drugs are unsafe. And another thing, revolving door, similar thing with the FDA, just all the big agencies and pharmaceutical companies and just chemical companies. You have CEOs that go from a chemical company or a big pharmaceutical company to working for the FDA and vice versa. And of course, there has to be some oversight on this. I mean, we have to see the obvious issue with the fact that when you have friends working for the group of people that you're supposed to be regulating, then there's going to be issues and things are going to be let kind of just to the side and let slide. And you see it with chemical or pharmaceutical drugs all the time. Something will be FDA proven to be safe. And this is always, I say, the best example of how messed up our system is. A drug will be FDA approved to be safe, and in no time will be taken off the market, and some attorney is showing a commercial on TV saying, do you have a loved one that died from this drug or whatnot, give us a call, they might owe you money. Like, it's like, what happened? How good are these FDA approval processes if something can be proven to be safe, then in no time be taken off the market? I mean, it's
okay, and that goes to this point. The point is that we cannot rely upon our government to protect us. We cannot rely upon our doctors to fix us. What we can do is we can arm ourselves with knowledge, modify our lifestyle, minimize our risk, and help prevent this from happening to you and your family. Now, in my book, I list the 10 most toxic chemicals to avoid and the 20 best ways to modify your lifestyle and minimize your risk. If anybody's interested in the book, it is hit number one environmental book on Amazon. You could go to the website, which is alanbell.me. That's alanbell.me. You could sign up there, put your email address in there, and sign up to download a free chapter in the book. And
well, let's get back to your story, because just in case some people might be lost on what exactly caused your illness. So we were at the part of the story where your investigators, they looked all over the place trying to figure out who poisoned you, what happened, looked at restaurants, your gym, everywhere you hung out, everybody you hung out with and talked to, and then they came to the conclusion that people in the same building were also getting sick. And then what happened? How did you connect the dots to figure out what was actually causing this?
Well, after they saw that other people in the building were getting sick, I went to an environmental doctor who specialized in environmental medicine. Nobody even recommended anybody like that up until that point in time. So I went to an environmental doctor, and he looked at the reports, and he took the history, and he sat down, and he said, I have news for you. You are suffering from sick building syndrome. I said, what's that? He says, the building that you're working in made you ill. I said, what do you mean the building that I'm working in? Please explain. He explained this. He said, you're working at a brand new building. There's new carpeting, there's new glues, there's new paints, there's new plastics, there's all the new materials. And they're outgassing volatile organic compounds, which are toxic. And in South Florida back then, they would not bring in any fresh air in buildings. They would just recirculate the old air to save electric bills, cooling bills. And he said, that's what happened to you. He says, that's actually the good news, that we found out what's wrong with you. But here's the bad news. The bad news is that it has injured your brain, injured your nervous system and your immune system, and you have now become hypersensitized to most chemicals in the environment, like perfumes, colognes, hairspray, automobile exhaust, and the list goes on and on and on. And now when you get exposed to these chemicals, it's causing you to have seizures and exacerbating the symptoms that were initially triggered by being inside that building. I said, well, what do I do? He says, you need to go to a complete safe place in the middle of nowhere where there's no chemicals. So he referred me to a group of people. It's called the Human Ecology Action League support group, where people that have become sensitized to chemicals, they have chapters all over the country. And it led me to a little bubble in the middle of the Arizona desert. It was an 800-square-foot bubble made out of glass, steel, and brick. There is nothing inside of it, no carpeting, no drapes, nothing soft like, bedding or nothing, just like a jail cell. And that's where my wife and I moved. They airlifted me there. By that time, I was in a wheelchair tethered to an oxygen tank. I was 145 pounds, 6'2". I was once an athlete before that. And there I ended up inside this bubble. And when you looked out the window, all you could see was nothing. No roads, no schools, no people, no street lights, no stores, nothing. It was isolated other than cactus. And that's where I ended up with my little girl and my wife. And shortly after that, I'd say about a year after that, my wife could no longer live like that. And she left. She left me and my daughter, our daughter, wow, alone inside this bubble. So here I am in the middle of nowhere and in this tiny bubble.
Was she taking care of you? Is that who was taking care of you? Because obviously you weren't really able to do much, right?
Right. State. She was taking care of me. And when she left, I had to hire an aide to take my daughter places, to go shopping and bring us things, because I couldn't go anywhere. And so I'm in this wheelchair, and I look to my little girl, and I see these big blue eyes, and I say to myself, I've got to find a way to get out of this, or my little girl's going to become an orphan. So what I did was, is I looked around the room from sitting in this chair, and I saw, what tools do I have? Well, I have a phone, I have a fax, and I have this pencil and paper. That's it. And with those four tools, I began using the telephone, talking and connecting with the top scientists in the United States. And what I discovered was is that my plight was just the tip of the iceberg of millions of Americans getting sick and dying every year because of the environments that we're exposed to in our own home, school, workplace, and neighborhood. So I had this aha moment, and I decided that I wanted to try and do something about it within the confines of my own home bubble. So I started a little charity called the Environmental Health Foundation, and I miraculously got the support of some pretty big hitters. Al Gore supported what I was doing. He was vice president at the time. Gene Cernan, who was the commander of Apollo 17, the last man to walk on the moon. Celebrities got involved, Alan Thicke, Jason Priestley, Matthew Perry, Kenny Loggins from Loggins and Messina got involved. And later on, other celebrities joined in, like Alan Thicke, Suzanne Summers, Aaron Brockovich's boss, if you remember that movie, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and the famous Harvard professor, Alan Dershowitz, law professor. So from inside this bubble, I started raising money and donating it to research. And pretty soon the media caught on to what I was doing. And the log line was, boy in the bubble starts charity to help save others. And I ended up in newspapers and magazines and talk shows and everywhere else.
I can just imagine the bond of you and your daughter going through this together.
Well, yeah, and the irony of the story was I fought to stay alive so she wouldn't become an orphan. And the irony was is that she ended up saving me, and I'll tell you how. So I put together this environmental health summit at the Biosphere 2 outside of Tucson, Arizona. And at this summit congregated the top scientists on the planet. And I could not attend it because I couldn't leave the bubble. But my daughter attended it instead in my place. And little did I know, when she was walking among these top elite scientists wearing their white lab coats, she would go up to them one at a time and tug on their coat and say, "Excuse me, sir, you're here to do all this research. Why can't you help my daddy?" And one by one, she did that until finally one scientist said to her, "Listen, here's the name and phone number of a doctor. Have your dad call him. I think he can help him." And it was through that gutsy effort that my daughter did that led me to a doctor who got me out of the bubble, gave me an anti-seizure medicine that was new, and it got me back out of the bubble. Now, so instead of jumping back into the legal arena, prosecuting one crime at a time, I thought that I was going to go after the ultimate crime that I had discovered, which is the crime against humanity, which humanity has committed against ourselves, more like the Frankenstein that we have created. So I hooked up with Aaron Brockovich's boss, a guy by the name of Ed Massery. He was the lawyer that was in the movie. He was a real-life lawyer in the movie. And I also hooked up with another famous environmental lawyer. His name is Jan Schlickman. And he was the real-life lawyer that John Travolta played in the movie called A Civil Action that came out in 1998. It was also based on a New York Times best-selling book called A Civil Action. So with these famous lawyers that I hooked up with, I ended up going after big bad corporations that were poisoning poor people that were too poor and too sick to be able to defend themselves. And there's three chapters in my book that gets into some of those cases that I handled. And when I asked these scientists way back then, where can we get the biggest impact? They said prevention. I said, how do we best prevent? They said public awareness. And how do we make the public aware? They said, put a face on this issue, write a book, and go public with this. Well, back then when they were telling me this, I was in the bubble. And the last thing I wanted to do was to put my face on this issue because I didn't want anybody to see me in that kind of condition. But I never forgot about what they said. And when you fast-forwarded yourself decades later, that's what really prompted me to write this book, to put a face on this issue so people could understand what's going on in their own families. Because invariably, this is something where we're all at risk. Nobody is immune. It doesn't matter if you're rich or you're poor, or you're black or you're white, or you're yellow or you're brown or you're red. It doesn't matter if you're Christian or you're Muslim or you're Jewish. We're all in the same boat. We all breathe the same air, eat the same food, and drink the same water. So what we need to do is we need to make the public aware of this. Now, this whole environmental movement has been focused on saving the whales and the birds and the trees and the ice caps and the global warming, and that's all good. But it has not, in my estimation, hit this issue right between the eyes. And that is, what is this whole environmental movement boiled down to? It boils down to saving the humans. It boils down to how it's affecting you and me in your own home and your own school and your own workplace. And that's the message that I want to narrow down and clarify. So the beauty of this message is this. You don't have to close smokestacks. You don't have to stand on picket lines. You don't have to lobby in Congress. And you don't have to worry about what's happening in far-off places like the ice caps melting or the trees in the rainforest being chopped down. What you can do is, this message is what you can do to protect yourself and your family right now and right in your own place. And that's what this message is. That's what this book is all about. And that's the difference that we can make. Because the good news is that this is not all doom and gloom. It's 100% preventable. And if you arm yourself with knowledge and you modify your lifestyle, you can help prevent and protect yourself and your family from becoming another statistic.
Well, the thing is, like you said, you made a really good point. If you don't save the humans, there won't be any humans to save the whales and the oceans and the ice. And so it's like, you know, if we only focus on trying to prevent all those other things, but we're not looking after ourselves, then who's going to protect everybody else? So, I mean, that's a really good point. And so one thing that I remember you saying in the first interview I heard you in was being in that bubble for a year. And I was kind of surprised.
That bubble 8 years.
Oh, 8 years. Yeah, I'm sorry. Eight years.
I was there almost a decade. And let me tell you something. Being inside that bubble, let me tell you something. The whole internet age passed me by. I couldn't go near television sets because the cathode ray tubes would cause me to have seizures from the electromagnetic frequencies.
Wow.
I was cut off from the world. And when I eventually was able to get out, it was like Rip Van Winkle waking up from an 8-year coma. And the entire world had changed.
Psychologically, how did it affect you? Because it seems like it must have some psychological effect on you. Like you must have, I mean, I couldn't even imagine being, like you said, you feel like you've been locked away in isolation in prison for 8 years, and then all of a sudden you're out, and I mean, you probably don't recognize the world that you once knew.
That's right. I did not recognize the world that I once knew. I can remember my daughter taking me to a mall after I got out. Everything had changed. The styles of the clothes had changed. The styles of the of automobiles had changed. I remember sitting in a movie theater watching a movie, and I jumped out of my seat because I never experienced surround sound before. All of this technology was new. Cell phones. I mean, computers. You know, when I first got into this thing, that you know, computers were not widespread as they were when I got out. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. It was, I don't know if you've, did you ever see the movie Mars? What was it, the last movie about Mars where the guy was stranded on the planet Mars?
I've seen parts of it. I've never watched it from beginning to the end.
I'm trying to remember who the name of that star, Matt Damon, starred in that movie. Mission to Mars or something like that. And it's about an astronaut that got stuck on Mars. And he had to be resourceful to survive. And he was there alone with no contact to civilization. And when I watched that movie, it very much reminded me of the experience that I had inside this bubble.
Or the Tom Hanks movie also, right? He had a similar kind of story. Didn't he have wasn't it Tom Hanks who got stranded on an island by himself?
Yeah, he was stranded on an island, exactly.
Yeah, similar.
Yeah, sort of like that.
Yeah.
Except those movies are fake. My story is real.
Well, the thing is, you know, I've talked a lot about on the show how we're social creatures and how, we need to have some type of social interaction with people. Like, I think it was Joe Rogan who once said, you know, if you look at prison, it shows you how social creatures we are, because you're surrounded by rapists and murderers and liars and the worst of society, and you punish somebody by taking them away from all these people and putting them alone. And it is kind of true how if you're by yourself long enough, it almost seems like you need to be around people because it keeps you grounded. You know, if you're constantly
right
around people, you know, if I'm wearing a silly outfit or dating a girl who isn't good for me, I can convince myself that this outfit looks nice or this girl is good for me because I can justify things in my mind. But if I have friends to say that, hey, you know, that chick you're dating is no good for you, Rick, you know, she's been around or whatnot, you know, then it kind of plants that seed and makes me kind of reexamine things. And, you know, it's almost like the Unabomber thing. You know, you go in a cabin in the middle of the woods, you probably can just go crazy if you're just by yourself long enough. And I wonder, I mean, with your experience, was there ever a time where you felt like sanity was lost or being lost, or you felt like you're, you know, what, you know, that you just needed some interaction with people, or did your just having your daughter around help out with that?
Let me put it to you this way. When you're given basically a sentence that this is the way it's going to be, and I mean, I wasn't just sitting in a wheelchair tethered to an oxygen tank feeling good. I was feeling sick, even in that situation, experiencing pain and discomfort every minute. So believe me, if my daughter wasn't around, I would have probably committed suicide. She was the only reason why I fought back, because she needed me, and I knew that if I was gone, her life would have been destroyed. Because the mother left, she was gone. And I got to tell you, my daughter's 29 years old now, and she's not seen or heard from her mother since.
I was going to ask you about that, but I'm like, I don't know if I want to get that personal. I don't know if you feel comfortable talking about it. But I was going to ask you if since then, since you've been back on your feet, if you've had any... Well, I can see why would you, right? Because, I mean, obviously, you know, if what's that saying? If you're going to... If you want me at my best, you know, you should have me at my worst, too. You should have... I mean, that's what makes a relationship is that you together at your worst, you're there for one another, and at your best, you're there for one another. So I'm sure it was very easy to be... your wife when you're, you know, life's good and you're making money and you're healthy and you're, you know, living in a nice place and all that stuff. But I think when you hit rock bottom, that's when you see who your real friends and family are. So
right. But you see, this isn't, I mean, to me, the real issue is not her leaving me. The real issue is her leaving her own daughter.
Yeah. And as a parent,
and disappearing. And how can you leave your own
that's crazy.
Kid? You know,
I have two. I have a 2-year-old and I a boy, a little over two, and I have a 9-month-old girl. And I'll tell you, I mean, I feel like being a parent is almost like trying to describe somebody what war is like. It's like I've never been through war, so no matter how many conversations I have with Vietnam vets or Iraq veterans or whatever, no words could describe what they actually
right.
went through. And I feel like being a parent is a similar experience, where no matter how much you try to describe to somebody the love you have for a child, there's just no explaining. I remember I was told 1,000 times, like, oh, it's going to change your life, you have no idea this. And I'm like, okay, I get it. And then once I went through it, I'm like, holy shit, I didn't get it. Like, this is beyond anything that I've ever experienced. And like you said, that's the most amazing part of your story, is that to leave you hanging is bad enough, but to leave a child hanging, and, you know, it's just... I couldn't even imagine, especially when I'm sure she didn't even know if you were going to survive or not, right?
Exactly.
Wow. Yeah. It's a heart-wrenching story, and I'll tell you, it's. I remember hearing your story, and I was just emotionally, I was affected, and I'm like, I got to get Alan on. I'm like, it's such a speaking of lead and stuff like that and chemicals. Have you ever heard the studies that kind of talk about lead being increase in lead also having a link to increase in crime? Like poor,
well,
there's been studies, you know, just kind of looking at how in poor areas there's this increase in lead, and children and people who have lead in their blood have a like 50% chance. I think it's like 50% chance of more likely of causing a crime or being a criminal or something like that.
Well, I don't know about. I'm not aware of any studies specifically about lead. They may or may not have those studies, but I am aware, as a general rule, that many of these chemicals, especially these heavy metals like mercury. I mean, do you remember Mad Hatter, the Mad Hatter cartoon? You know, from way back, the Disney cartoon.
Yep.
The Mad Hatter is because the story behind that is when they used to make hats. You know, 100 years ago, they used mercury. So the hatters that were making hats were exposed to mercury, and it made them crazy. So all of these, many of these chemicals adversely affect your your nervous system, and the heart of your nervous system is your brain. So absolutely.
So like thimerosal, when thimerosal was used as a mercury preservative in vaccines, Robert Kennedy Jr. was a big... part of getting that removed.
Right. In fact, I It's not removed, though.
It's still not removed.
He's spearheading the movement, and I've actually assisted him and worked with him in that movement.
So it's not. I thought it was. I guess I'm gonna have to research this again. But I've had Del Bigtree from the documentary Vaxxed on, and I've had people in the past talking about that issue, and it. I thought for some reason I was told that it was.
Can you hold on one second?
Yeah, no problem. Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, so it's not removed. So is it removed? So when a pediatrician or a doctor says, "Oh, that has been removed from vaccines," has it been removed from any, or is it just a complete lie?
Well, it hasn't been removed. I mean, it's.
I believe
it's
it was removed from
there.
the flu vaccine. No.
I'm not sure about flu because we're just dealing with, the autistic kids and the inoculations. I'm not sure about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, maybe that's what they mean. Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, again, this is why, like what you're saying, like information is so important because the parents need to know these things. And if you go to a pediatrician or you go to any doctor, I mean, all they try to do, I mean, first of all, doctors, you've talked about this and it's really important. All they try to do is here's the symptom. Let's make the symptom go away. This doctor, Chris Kresser has a great metaphor. He talks about modern medicine and how they only focus on the symptom. And he says, if you have a rock in your shoe and you go to a doctor, modern medicine, the way they handle issues is they'll say, hey, take some painkillers for your pain in your foot. But it won't tell you to
take off
the shoe and get rid of the rock. They don't get to the root cause of the issue, which is similar to your story because it's like, they didn't, we probably would find these environmental issues and these chemical issues much easier if people weren't just trying to fix the symptom, but trying to get to the root cause. Like, what's causing the sickness? What's actually causing people to feel like crap?
Right.
Yeah. So it's really interesting. And Suzanne Summers also, I think she wrote a book about a similar topic, right? Toxic or something.
Yeah, it's about her husband. And actually, ironically, her husband's name is Alan, too. And he was poisoned, and he ended up having chemical sensitivity like me.
Yeah, I believe they bought like a really modern house because their house burned down, and they assumed, modern house, everything should be, and that's the thing. That's another deceiving notion is this idea that you assume because it's a modern house, it must not have all these old things that lead in the pain and asbestos and all these things that you would assume would be causing somebody to get sick from their home. But even these modern houses have chemicals and stuff that can make you sick.
Right.
Yeah. So, really, really interesting. But thank you so much, Alan. I won't take up any more of your time. Amazing, amazing story. I'll put links to, your book, your website, everything in the show notes and in the show description. And people can obviously find your book, I'm assuming, anywhere where they can find books, right?
Well, the best place to order the book is on Amazon, or if you just go right to my website, alanbell.me, alanbell.me, you could order it off the site. It'll send you to Amazon, and you could also sign up on the website with your email address and download a free chapter in the book.
Awesome, awesome. Well, thank you so much, Alan. I really appreciate your time. I really appreciate you taking just the fight head on and really getting this information out there. Like I said in the beginning of the show, I think this is one of those health issues that everybody talks about Big Pharma, everybody talks about Monsanto, everybody, all these things that are causing us to be less healthy, but this is one, this is one story, one aspect of what could be causing us to be less healthy that we really haven't considered, or at least the information isn't out there. So I wonder.
Okay, let me just add to that point that you just made.
Yeah.
Good health and longevity is no longer just about diet and exercise and nutrition. There's a new paradigm shift that's occurred, and that is. It's also about what you breathe and what you touch. And that's the bottom line to my message. you could eat all the right things, you could exercise, you could do all of those, take supplements, exercise, eat the right foods, and I did all those things. And I still got crushed because I wasn't aware of what you breathe and what you touch is equally as important as what you eat and the type of exercise that you have. So that's a point that everybody needs to understand.
Oh, absolutely. Living a healthy lifestyle and being healthy there's so much to it. And that's, like I said, that's why I think your story is so important, because there's so many people who probably feel a little fatigued daily, aren't getting good sleep, maybe getting sick more often than not. And of course, first place you're going to look at is, well, maybe I need to exercise more. Maybe I need to take vitamins. Maybe I need to eat more organic. But this is one place where a lot of people don't look. I have a good friend of mine who was getting sick. And then he was taking time off, and he would stay at home to try to rest up. And the more time he was spending at home, the sicker he was getting. And then eventually, somebody suggested, "Hey, how about you get your house checked for mold?" And it was it's not an old house. He doesn't remember of any water or anything that could be causing it, but he had it checked anyways. And come to find out, that's what happened. It was mold. So he was resting at home, thinking he's going to feel better. And the more time he was spending at home, the sicker he was getting. So
exactly. You have a very keen, good instinct on this whole issue, and I commend you for that. And there's a lot of announcers, talk show hosts that have you on, and I've been on some pretty big shows, and a lot of these people they just don't get it. But I could see that you're really in tune to this issue, and my hat's off to you.
Thank you, I appreciate that. Well, similar to like yourself, I think. Well, I started the show before I had any kids, and I called it the Ripple Effect Podcast because I truly believed in the idea of the ripple effect, that something as simple as sparking conversation can go a long way. And I think that once we start thinking we can't change things, then we're already defeated. We've lost. And if we can just say, hey, even if I have a busy schedule, even if I don't have a lot of resources, even if I just spark conversation and kind of share interesting information with people, then that is doing my part. And that's kind of how I felt. I felt like, I'm going to do my part by just bringing people that I think have interesting stories or books that I like, films that I like, anybody that I find interesting, and hoping that, I can share their story and their information with more people. And really, that I was motivated by only that. And then after I had kids, I was only more motivated, because now I'm, sure. Again, as as a parent, you're thinking about, what world are they going to be left with? And so I think, it's one of those things where I'm sure a lot of people have you on who find your story interesting, but might not be as emotionally connected to it or passionate about it as I am. And, similar to yourself, I'm very passionate about these issues. And I've had controversial people on, like Del Bigtree and his Vax documentary. I've had Dr. Brzezinski on. I've had people on who are a little controversial. But I'm willing to have these conversations and share this information. And I think if people's hearts are in the right place and we all get this information out there, as long as people get the information, that's the most important part. Then you can decide what you want to do with it. But I think that a lot of times people are only getting one side of the story. They're only getting, the side that media is, giving us, and they're not getting stories like yours. And like you said, because of lobbying and the money involved in this, a lot of times a lot of this information is suppressed from the public. So, I really take my hat off to people like yourself who are fighting this and going on these shows, and I'm sure it's probably not super enjoyable to tell the whole story over and over again, repeating it. And
right.
But I know you're doing it because it's important.